Accession number 10648, Reel 4.
George Peake, Reel 4. You were telling me about the lieutenant who was next to you. What happened? What were you about to say about
well,
that?
Well, we went down into the gully and met them as they came down. And we fired as much as we could at them, you see. And eventually we drove them back. They drove them up and to the right into trenches on their own side. And
what had happened to the lieutenant?
Oh, he just died. Just dropped dead. He must have been shot in the head. I don't know where he was shot.
How deep was the gully where you were? How steep were the sides?
Oh, it was coming to the end of the gully. You know, it wasn't very deep. But it was. It was about 8 foot, about as deep as this, that's all. Coming and went round, you know.
And how wide? And how wide?
Oh, about as wide as this street must have been.
Just a normal street width.
Not quite as wide as this street, you know.
So that would probably be one of the Crithia nullahs. This would be one of the Crithia nullahs.
One of the what?
Crithia nullahs.
Crithia nullahs, yes. It was the same nullah. Same one all the time. And we, as I say, we fired at them and fired at them until they... We drove them back, leaving a lot of their dead, you know, quite a number of ours. Until there was just six of us left. I didn't know how many there was. But we saw that the trench that these bayonet fighters had jumped out of was still empty, was empty there. And just then, all the remainder of our company and the battalion must have gone over. They all cheered, you know, could hear they were going over, cheering. And that left the Turks on there, over on this side, firing at them, you see, to relieve us. I suppose they thought they'd killed all of us and they could walk down after. But we got in this side trench, only a small one, so that we could fire at them coming if they tried to get through, you see.
In the gully?
Into the gully. Anyway, that was it. They never got through the gully, and we held them there until night, and it got dark at night. It got must have been going on for 12 o'clock at night. But I thought I heard somebody coming along, and I got down listening. I heard somebody say, "Keep your bloody head down. Keep your bloody head down, so and so, you know." So I thought, "Oh, that sounds like some of ours." So I thought I saw a shade come in, and I got my rifle lined up on them. I said, "Hold it. Who are you?" So he said, "We're the Marines. Marines." So he came, Commander something of somebody, Anson Brigade.
Anson Battalion, there was one, yes.
Anson Battalion, I think it was. He said, "We're all right, we've got a machine gun." So he said, "Give us a lift with it." So we all give him a lift with the machine gun, and we fixed the machine gun up on that little bit of a trench, so we're all right. And he said, "Now we're going over the top now." So he went over the top, he took them all with him, the Marines, about 20 of them. And they went over, and there was such a hell of a lot of shouting and that. But they all came up, they all came back, and dropped into our trench, and we dug the trench for them with a machine gun. Anyway, he said, "I think you'd better go and find your own battalion now. He said, I don't know where they are. I said, no, neither do we. But we had to go down this trench again. They'd come up and work our way around. Eventually, across the gully, and we found the battalion.
So can I just ask a couple of questions? So you'd started off on the right-hand side of the gully. You'd started off on the right-hand side of the gully.
Yes.
And then you'd gone and you'd been firing across at the Turkish attack on the left.
Yeah.
And then you'd gone into the gully to stop Turks advancing down the gully.
Yes.
And then you'd gone up onto the left, into a little trench on the left.
That's right.
So, and the battalion were still on the right. And that's what had happened
that's
to
right.
you.
That's right. My battalion was still on the right.
Well, were you involved in... When you went down to meet them in the gully, were you involved in any bayonet fighting?
Firing?
Bayonet fighting. Or was it just firing? Shooting?
Oh, just shooting. Shooting at them. Shooting at the Turks, then. From the left. You know, until... The Marines came up.
So you'd gone from the right, down into the gully, and then up
on
the
left. Yes.
And then fired into the gully to stop the Turks coming
That's
down.
That's right. That's correct.
You hadn't actually been firing at the Turks when you were in the gully.
We stopped the advance. Mm. Otherwise, if they'd got through that gully, if they'd have beaten and they got through that gully, there was nobody. I don't think there was anybody behind us.
And how many of you were there? There were six when you first went into this little trench on the left.
Oh, I don't know. 30 of us or more.
That's by the time you'd got sorted out?
Oh, by the time we got sorted out? Oh, I don't know. You see, I don't know who was killed and who wasn't killed. I couldn't tell you, really.
Now, one of the people with you told me last time was Billy Cotton. Is that right? Billy Cotton.
Billy Cotton. I think Billy Cotton was with us. He was one that was left. One of the six.
He was the band leader.
His mate, Tommy Wright. He was killed. Tommy Wright was killed taking a dozen water bottles over, trying to get some water. And he wasn't the only one. There was a string of Australians there too. And Tommy Wright was one of them. One that was killed trying to get this water.
What were the Australians doing there?
Trying to get water like us, being killed. You know, along the line of them here, dotted here and there. There must have been a spring there. And our fellows as well, interweaving with the Australians. They were there as well. So.
What kind of a man was Billy Cotton? Do you remember much about him?
Oh, he looked something like a baker to me. I thought he was a baker at first. You know, he white face, always a white face. I don't think the sun ever touched his face, Billy Cotton. I never saw him after the war.
What kind of a man was he? Was he a friendly type or pump?
Oh, just an ordinary man, no swank about him, you know. He picked his own pals, you know. I never bothered with him. Although he was in our company, I didn't bother with him. I knew him. My pal was another chap named Wally.
Who was he?
He was the one that eventually bound my head up when I got shot in the head.
What happened after the June the 4th attack then, when you'd rejoined your battalion?
Well, we had a rest, a bit of a rest, you know. And during that rest, I remember my mate. During this rest, we were sat down. In behind a little hillock where the Turks couldn't see us, you know, because we were right on top of the Turks all the time. And he pulled his shirt off and started killing the lice. He said, just look at them. He said, they're like elephants. And I said, you dirty devil, you must be filthy. He said, have a look at your shirt. And so I had a look at my shirt, and it was the same. That was when we knew we had lice.
How did you try and get rid of them? How did you try and get rid of them?
Oh, we tried with nothing. We wanted heat. We turned the shirt inside out, and with a candle, we tried to go with a candle to kill all the eggs and that, but it was impossible. It was impossible to stop it.
Well, between the 4th of June and the 15th of July, when you were first wounded, I'd like to ask you about what conditions were like in the trenches, you know.
Between the 4th of June...
And when you got wounded the first time.
Pretty bad.
What were the actual trenches like? Could you describe what they looked like?
It's very, very hard to describe that, because they were like you've seen on the pictures, like modern trenches with a firing step and all that. We made it that way, you know.
How deep were they at that time?
Oh, about 8 foot deep, I think. When I stood on... Well, you may tell. When I stood on the firing step, I was up to my waist. In cover. After that, there was no cover.
And how high was the firing step?
Firing step was about a couple of feet, 2 feet. And then you jumped on there, and you were exposed then properly. All your head and shoulders were exposed.
Your head and shoulders.
Head and shoulders. Oh yes.
Were there any dugouts at all?
No.
Or just cubby?
Not on Gallipoli. I'm talking about Gallipoli.
Were there any cubby holes? You know, did you just dig a hollow in the back of the trench?
No, not that I know of. Oh! The only cubby hole that I remember is when with a tall fella working with us, and he got shot in the head. We had to dig the back of the trench out and put him inside it. Put him inside the hole, the cubby hole. And then fill it in again.
So he was buried there.
That's how we had to do. Because occasionally they get shot, you know, even in the trench.
So you had no overhead shelter at all? You just slept in the open?
No, nothing at all. And all around, everywhere, was dead bodies. Absolutely dead bodies. Everywhere. Unburied.
You couldn't bury them then?
No.
Why couldn't you bury them? Was it just too many of them, or...?
Oh, there was... by this time, after the 4th of June, they'd got a lot more rifles, a lot more men there then. And the air used to be filled with bullets. You couldn't move, hardly.
Was the smell a big problem to you?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Terrible smell. Terrible, it really was.
What did it smell like? Can you...
Well, no, it smelled like death. You could tell the death smell. Beside that, there was blue bottles. I don't think they was quite as big as ours. We have over here, them big blue bottles. But they weren't much less, but they were a bit less. And immediately a man was shot, they'd be into his eyes. And every part of him they could get eating, you know. In fact, you couldn't eat. You couldn't eat a meal hardly. You had to wave your hand and guard in, and then you might get a mouthful of them on a bit of jam on a biscuit. Because we didn't get much bread, you know.
I'll come to that. And how did you feel about that? Did the flies disgust you? Or did you get used to it?
Well, at first, but we got so used to it that it didn't bother you. What did bother people was, well, it must have been something, was the fact that nearly everybody, I was lucky one of the lucky ones that didn't get it, but they were all breaking away in sores.
What were the sores
knees.
Like? What did they look like, the sores?
just like ordinary sores with a crust on them, you know.
Big ones?
Big ones, yes. Oh, hands and the knees and all that. But there was movement on the knuckles, especially. They were pretty bad for that. And then, of course, it was the in the trench itself. We made that as comfortable as possible.
How did you do that? What could you do to make it more comfortable?
Well, inside the trench, we cleared all the dead bodies out. And one place where I used to, what I got, it was my place, you know, as you go along, you file in. And there were three dead Turks on the parapet, on our firing parapet. And the legs were so very, very stiff that I lay underneath the legs. And when I wanted to look over the top very, very carefully, I looked very carefully then, I pulled myself up by one of the legs, dead Turks. Well, they weren't decomposed, they were just dead. And you got to look very, very quietly over, and then you sink down as if they couldn't see it, no movement. And then at the back of one trench, the Scots, the fifth Royal Scots, the Kilties, must have captured this trench. And there was a Scotchman looking, eyes wide open, face black, looking at inside the trench. He wasn't moved. But
why not?
I don't know. Yeah. You couldn't put your finger up above the trench, but they'd have it.
Oh, he was outside, yeah.
Well, they kept the fire in. So in another trench, there was three of us together. I think I told you about this. It was Mitchell, a fellow out there. He'd come as with one of the extra men, you know. He had a wife and two children, and he was showing us a photo of them. Well, in our parapet, they'd pick some iron keyholes. Well, they were light keyholes, you know, with a hinge too. You could lift up, and when you'd stop by it, then he went down. Well, this I think he was an ex-guardsman. He jumped up. He said, "I'll get that blighter." Kept sending bullets over, you know. And he just put his rifle through the loophole. When it was too late, he was dead. The bullet hit him in the head, and his brains came all over us as we were sat down in the trench opposite. And Mitchell, the other man, said, "Oh, the swine, you know, I'll get him." And he did the same thing. We moved his body, you know, at one side. And he jumped up and put his rifle through the loophole, and he was dead. A wonderful singer, too.
How did you react when you got a man's brains over you? When the brains came over you, that's not a very nice thing. How did you react to that sort of thing?
Oh, both the brains came over. Oh, we brushed them off.
How did you feel?
Terrible. I said, you're not really terrible. You're so used to it, you see. And they say you can get used to anything. Well, we were used to that. We were used to seeing the dead. Later on, after the war, I wouldn't go near a dead person.
Right. What about the? Did you have the trenches? Did you have proper communication trenches to the front line?
Did I?
Did you have proper communication trenches?
Oh yes, proper communication. Yeah. Oh yes. Yes.
And what about barbed wire? Did you have any barbed wire out?
Not very much barbed wire. No, there wasn't much barbed wire. We did have a string out, but. Not a great deal. The Turks had a lot.
How far away were the Turks?
25 yards, 30 yards, if that. Sometimes I never remember them being any less.
What about your food? What food did you get in that period? What was it like? How did it come up to the line first? How did you get it?
Oh, bully beef, jam, and biscuits, and sometimes we got a bit of bread.
What state?
And that was a luxury.
What state was the bully beef in? Because it's a very hot climate.
Oh, good state.
It hadn't melted.
Very good. It was cold at night, you know. Went frosty and cold at night. Pretty hot during the day.
And who brought it up?
It came from the cook house with the, what do you call them? Runners, you know, runners brought it up. Well, in fact, bully beef was our stable diet, really. We had rations, iron rations, with four biscuits in, four dog biscuits in, and a tin of bully beef. That was kept in a white bag that we kept with us, in case we couldn't get anything to eat. And my company, had lost them all. And I was detailed, but this was just before the 4th of June, I was detailed with my pal to go down this nullah and climb up halfway up, and we'd find a trench, a cave there. And we went, slept there the night, and we could feel moles or something running our faces. In the morning, our faces were dirty with claw marks. And when we looked in the bottom of the cave, it was absolutely full of bully beef tins. Oh, I don't know how much was there. So one of the boys, one of my company, going up, we told him about it, and they sent a big, we took what we wanted out, and then they sent them with a bag to cut it all back, because my company had none. And if you've eaten your iron rations before you should do, you was charged for it, you see. So
you didn't get, you got bully beef, you say you got, what else?
You got bully beef, yes, bully beef and jam, that was the main,
What were the biscuits like?
Oh, they were hard, like sprats, like sprats dog biscuits. I don't know whether they were sprats dog biscuits or what, were they purified ones? Oh, what? But they were like, just like square, big square ones.
What about, you say you got bread. How often would you get bread? You say it wasn't very...
Probably about once or twice a week. It wasn't very often we got bread. About two or three times a week.
Would you get butter? Or just bread on its own?
No, I don't remember any butter. I don't remember butter.
How about the water ration? Did you get much water?
Yes, we got water rations, all right.
Did you get enough?
Not quite enough, no. Although I spared some of mine to go in a little tin I had, Nestle's milk tin, you know, these Nestle's milk tins. One of them cleaned out, and I used to put water in that and get my shaving kit. And heat the water with a candle underneath it in the daytime and the mirror, and I could shave then. And what incidents like this occurred?
Did you manage to keep clean at all? Was it not impossible?
Only your face and your hand. You couldn't have a bath. I don't remember having a bath while I was there, but we were moved over at one time to, I think it must have been Suvla Bay, because we went in there and I thought, I'll have my shirt now in the sea. So I got my shirt, swam out into the sea and dropped it and put stones on it, swam back, and when I did do, of course, there was a jutting outline, and the Turks were firing at me. So that's the reason I think it must have been Suvla Bay.
Possibly. I don't know, actually. What did you do about... Were you expected to shave, or was it just you that shaved?
Oh, yes, you were expected to shave, if possible. Oh, yes, you were.
What about the... Were you expected to keep your uniform smartish, or what?
Yes. They'd come round sometimes, and if you wanted a new pair of trousers wore out, you know. I think I had the same battle dress as I came from Egypt in. With a kit bag, you see. Of course, my kit bag, like all the others who were on the plane, nearly all pinched. People are pinched out of them. And I had the same battle dress, the same tunic. That's what I'm trying to think of. The same tunic almost all the way through.
It was hard wearing them.
Pardon?
It was pretty hard wearing them.
Oh, yes, it must have been. I don't remember having an issue of a tunic, but I remember having an issue before the 4th of June of trousers, because I got the issue and they'd fitted on about 10 foot. So much big, you know, so big for me. But you just threw the back, you see. And you had to have that, accept them. There was nothing else.
What about latrines? What were the latrines like?
Oh, you had to do it where you could.
Was there not a special place?
Not in the trenches. In some there were. You dug the back out and go in there and do it in there, then come in again. You know, just covered up by a piece of bagging, but nothing else if you wanted anything like that. And at night, you got to go and try and get out at night. That was dangerous, having one at night. If you wanted to do your business at night, you're a bit dangerous.
And no paper. Was there any paper for you?
Oh, there was paper. We used to have papers. We got papers from England and that.
No, I mean, for the toilet?
Pardon?
For the toilet, for the latrine. Toilet.
Not for the toilet, no, to read. But we used it for the toilet, of course.
Talking of things you got from England, did you get parcels from England?
Yes. We've got parcels now and again.
What would be in them?
I don't think I ever got one. I don't think I ever got one while I was on Gallipoli.
Ah. What would your friends have in their parcels? What would your friends have in their parcels? Well, you said other people had parcels. What would be in them? Would they share them out?
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, of course. Oh, yes. Like on the desert, I got a parcel. Cakes and stuff. And those who were in the tent with me had a cake and they shared it with us.
What about letters? Did you write home or did you get
letters
from home?
I wrote them. I wrote home. We got some of them, but I didn't get them all.
What would you say? What sort of things? Would you tell them what it was like?
Oh, no, I couldn't tell them anything because they were all censored. If you got a green envelope, then they weren't censored. But if you didn't get a green envelope and you wrote on an ordinary one, it was censored by the doctor. But the green envelope was meant on a special. I think they were conveyed there specially.